I added one more podcast to the giant podcast bin. Now you have plucked that podcast out and started listening.
I took my microphone and found some human folk. Then I recorded all the noises while we spoke.
My name is Adam Buxton, I'm a man.
I want you to enjoy this, that's the plan.
Hey, how are you doing, podcats? I'm Adam Buxton, and I'm very glad to be with you for another podcast. It's a very nice evening out here in the Norfolk countryside. What are we looking at? We're still looking at the beginning of May, I would say. Early May, how about that? 2022. We got some impressive clouds that I'm looking at. It's a little windy, but it's nice and mild, so that's good. There you are, that's the weather situation in the past in Norfolk. Excuse me, got some throat clearing issues. I think there's probably a couple of reasons for that. Nothing too sinister, I'm hoping. Reason one, hay fever. Always forget that I suffer from it. Not too badly, but I do get it. And the other reason for throat clag is that I just had a selection of chocolate mini eggs, that I found in my wife's office. If you know my wife, please don't tell her, because she will genuinely be a bit annoyed. And I do feel slightly embarrassed about it, because I'm a grown man, I don't know if you know, and I'm supposed to have self-control. But I was thinking, oh, it would be so nice to have a chocolate egg. I bet there's some left over from Easter, I was thinking. And I bet my wife, has stashed them in her office, in that bureau of hers. So I flipped down the top of the bureau while she was out. And sure enough, there was the egg stash. It was a great time. And I had, I think, five. But it's playing havoc with my hay fevery throat. Can't just have chocolate eggs and not expect consequences in this day and age. Anyway, listen, let's get on. Ooh, there's a nice warm wind coming at me. I hope you're well, by the way. All good here, apart from minor throat clag. Rosie's doing well. She's up ahead, bouncing. So let me tell you a little bit about podcast episode number 177. Buxton checks notes on phone. This episode features a rambling conversation with British comedy, acting and writing duo Freya Parker and Celeste Dring, also known as comedy duo Lazy Susan. Here's a few brief Susan facts for you. Freya, who grew up in the north of England, and Celeste, who's from the West Midlands, met after leaving university and beginning to pursue acting careers in the early 2010s. By 2014, they were performing character-based comedy together as Lazy Susan and were nominated for a Best Newcomer Award at the Edinburgh Fringe. Further well-received Edinburgh shows followed over the years, as did mainly comedic acting roles in a variety of TV shows and more recently feature films. The pair made their first comedy radio show, The East Coast Listening Post, for Radio 4 in 2018. And the following year, they made a pilot for a Lazy Susan TV sketch show on BBC Three that included characters from their live shows. A further four episodes were commissioned, and they aired earlier this year, 2022. They can still be viewed on the BBC iPlayer, and you'll find a link in the description of this podcast. My conversation with Freya and Celeste was recorded face-to-face back in February of this year in London. It was the first time I had met them, and I started by addressing the slight creepiness of recording the podcast in the small hotel room I was staying in at the time. By the way, because I don't think I made it clear in our conversation who was who, Celeste is panned to the middle, if you're listening on headphones. Freya is more over to the right. Freya's on the right, Celeste is in the middle. Buckles is on the left. I'll be back at the end for a very brief goodbye, but right now, with Freya and Celeste of Lazy Susan. Here we go. Now, I'm going to set the scene. We are sat in a hotel room in the Barbican area of London town. Mm-hmm. I looked on a website and saw this room, and it looked much bigger. Mm. And it's got a little kitchenette area and a table where we are sat around a small countertop. But in the picture, it looked really spacious and spacious enough that I thought, well, it won't be that creepy to invite two women I've never met before to record a podcast.
Yeah.
It'll be fine. Sure, they're in their 30s. I'm in my 50s. We've never met. Mm. But it shouldn't be a problem. And then, of course, as soon as you arrived, I thought, maybe it is a problem and it's a bit weird. Because it's already weird, you know, meeting someone you've never met before and sitting down and recording a long-form conversation.
Yeah.
But then if you do it in a hotel room,
yeah,
and there's a bed.
The bed's prominent, I'll say that.
It's prominent, it's dominant. It's a truly a bedroom.
Yeah.
I haven't slept in it, though. That's one thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, if it was unmade, I'd be like, Celeste, I think we should...
Red flag.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
The safety word is, let's get out of here.
If it was unmade and I was in my pants...
Yeah.
What's the creepiest interview you've ever done?
Oh, great question. I don't know if I've done a creepy interview. I would say we've definitely done our time with creeps.
Oh, for sure. I think we did an interview in the back of a van.
Yeah.
Like in our first Edinburgh, like 2014. Thank you so much for the opportunity. We'll get in your van.
Yeah.
You're a dental student, but you're also writing reviews. That's completely legit.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Dental student.
I'm Dennis, and I'm a dental student with a passion for theatre.
With a passion for women's teeth, which I collect.
I would say it's definitely a thing of, like, women in comedy. You get, obviously, weird male fans that only go and watch women comedians.
Mm. But in terms of interviews...
No.
It's been up until now.
Cool. I have been immersing myself in your work. I was tipped off a couple of years ago, actually, by my brother, who often tips me off to good things. Mm-hmm. And he'd seen your pilot on BBC Three.
Yeah.
2019, right?
Yes. Yeah. Ages ago.
Previous to that, you had been on Radio 4, which I didn't realise as well, with a show that is so up my street.
Oh.
It's ridiculous. And in fact, I've done similar things as kind of adverts for this podcast. Mm. Yours was called the East Coast Listening Post, and it is superficially a spoof of all things This American Life.
Right,
and kind of NPR American podcasting.
Mm, yeah.
A certain style.
It is like a spoof, but it is also...
A bit of a love letter.
Yeah, we always used to say it's a love letter because you listen to it and it is just such... It's such a thing, isn't it? It's such a niche.
I think there's always a lot of flattery and parodies because you've paid close attention to it. So there's obviously you like it on some level.
Who does the voice for the... This show is brought to you by...
That's me.
That's you, yeah.
With the sort of kind of...
Oh, God.
Kind of breaking the voice. Yeah. It's like you're swallowing your own voice.
I think we've had that same guy. It's a bit like comic book guy or some Simpsons guy.
Anyway. Yeah, totally.
But I think they've had that same guy doing This Show Is Brought to You By.
Yeah, it's like there's
he still
a lot
does
of,
it, doesn't he?
Yeah, stuff in your throat, in your still trying
and
to
talk. And what were some of your things?
We did a thing called Hydrate Mate, which is like a hat that vibrates every time you need to drink
vibrates
some water.
When you get to a point and you can't go on anymore,
yeah.
Hydrate Mate has your back.
Yeah, and it basically was like, it comes in a range of colors, including lime green and brown.
Tell me what the premise of the show was for people who haven't heard it.
It was after, like, Serial came out, the podcast Serial, which is obviously massive, and it was the first time people met Sarah Koenig. Who had this, like, kind of, like, vocal fry and very earnest kind of journalism. But, yeah, it was like that, but the concept was, like, two American sisters who come over to England and come over to the UK to look at British culture.
They're Anglophiles basically. Yeah. So each episode focuses on a different aspect of British culture. So the first episode is old money, like Grey Gardens, kind of rich people that can't afford to live in their big mansions anymore. Yeah. And we had one about where Tim Key played a guy who was Mr. Splat, which was a euphemism for Mr. Blobby. Stuff like that, just like weird things about British culture, and we do one each episode. Mm.
And up to that point, you'd been doing sketch stuff live mainly, right? Going to Edinburgh and that kind of thing?
Yes.
Having met in 2012?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how did that come about?
It's actually a very boring story. We're always like, we should spice this story up because it's so plain.
Like, we met in rehab. Like, it was crazy.
There was just a vibe.
Like, in LA or I somewhere.
Was, you know, doing a jam session.
Yeah, I was tattooing her. And we were like, wait, what is your name? And do you want to do sketch comedy?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. No, we met through a mutual friend. I was doing a play, like a fringe play in London. Very hard-hitting little drama. Thank you.
What was it about?
Was it called Skinhead?
Yes.
It was called Skinhead.
Yes.
I don't know if I played a teen, but certainly a frustrated young adult whose mum obviously had the cancer. And get this, dad's not on the scene.
Ah. Oh,
obviously. Man. Yeah. Fucking men. And then mum gets a young boyfriend.
And is he the skinhead?
No, the skinhead was plot twist is mum because she's got the cancer.
Oh, yeah.
This isn't pulling any punches, this thing.
No. I had to cry in it. Oh, it was a big role. I don't know actually why I'm shitting on it because I've got so much work out of that. Weirdly, so like I always think if I hadn't done that job, I wouldn't have met Ed, who was the assistant director, because we were talking about writing one night and he was like, oh, well, I'm writing with a friend of mine. We should all meet and I think you two would get on. And then introduced me to Celeste. And then we did get on. And then we sort of started making work together.
Yeah.
So I take it all back. Great little job.
Yeah.
And then we started writing. And then it was bad, wasn't it? Bad, bad theatre.
Yeah, inexcusable, actually.
What were you writing? Was it funny stuff immediately? Or
no,
you were doing serious stuff, were you?
So we were doing...
Oh, no.
Because you both wanted to act originally, right? I mean, you do act still. Mm. But that was your main ambition.
I did sort of want to act. But I more wanted to just make stuff and hopefully acting would come out of it. It wasn't my burning desire to like audition for Holby City or like be in dramas and stuff, but I just wanted to make work and I didn't really know how to go about it. And I suppose comedy, live comedy especially, felt not accessible, but like a bit of a meritocracy. Like if you just kept going and had enough resilience to handle bombing and then go back, that you would eventually carve a bit of a path, as opposed to like acting looked like a bit of a lottery to me, or a bit of a like, you know, one in a million. I felt like, you know, you up your chances if you make your own stuff.
Yes, and acting is dependent on so many other superficial things that you have no control over.
Yeah, and it feels like comedy, you can be a bit weird or you don't have to look perfect, particularly as a woman at that time. I feel like things are changing now, but there was still a particular obsession with a certain kind of very thin, well-spoken, beautiful sort of woman. And I kind of thought
You're describing my wife.
Not again. Yeah, so I think comedy seemed like more open to if you feel slightly alternative. And I guess my best hope, and still is, of like doing interesting jobs as like a character actor and trying to do like stuff like that rather than try and, yeah, hit the mainstream in that way. But
same with me, and that's why I'm not more successful. Because I very much, I've chosen to stay alternative.
Totally. God, yeah.
For me, it's a choice.
I turned down The Crown.
Did you? Yeah. Liz.
So give it to Olivia.
Yeah,
God's
sake.
Instead, you were in The Windsors, though.
Yes, yeah. Mm.
Good gig. That's another clip that I saw that made me really laugh. You and Ellie White.
Yes,
of the podcast.
Ah.
And you are playing Princess Eugenics.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the S is silent, but yes.
Eugenie.
Yeah.
What kind of a name is Eugenie
anyway? I don't know.
I mean, it is almost eugenics, isn't it?
Yeah. Is it French?
I'm going to Google the shit out of this.
I've never heard it anywhere else, apart from at the palace.
I've got to sign in to the hotel.
Mm-hmm. Happy to wait.
An email. Dr. Buckles at coolguy.biz. Shazam.
Nice.
Mm.
I declare that I have understood the general terms of use and accept unreservedly. I would like to receive daily emails from the hotel.
The rest of time.
Can they do hourly? That would be...
What does the name Eugenie mean? Eugenie. How are you saying it?
Eugenie.
Eugenie.
I thought it was Eugenie.
French female form of Eugene.
Okay. Which is from...
Which is from the Greek name Eugenios, which means good, well. And genes, meaning born.
So, well born.
Well born. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, story checks out, isn't it?
Yeah.
Story checks out.
Yeah, so Princess Eugenie was well-born, depending on your perspective and your definition of well.
Mm.
And you do a spectacular posh accent for her.
Thank you.
How did that happen?
Okay, so the voice is kind of like that. So you kind of linger on the ends of words and, like, go up at the end. Is like a thing that, yeah, kind of posh girls do. But yeah, it's funny because when they were first auditioning for it, the Beatrice part was well-spoken and posh. And for a joke, they'd written the Eugenie part as Cockney.
Okay.
So it was all written like she was from EastEnders. And they cast me having done that. And then as we were rehearsing and going into the first sit, they changed their minds and they were like, oh, we want you to match. But yeah, I honestly just nabbed it from Made in Chelsea.
Okay.
And that's how they all talk on there.
Here's a little clip. And this is Beatrice and Eugenie become social media influencers.
Yeah, sounds about right.
We're only just in the top 10 now. I don't think we're ever going to get back on the Sovereign Grand.
But who needs it? We're both going to be married now. Besides, we're going to be online influencers.
Don't think so. All the zappy brands have turned us down. Apple, Nike, WH Smiths. They're all saying the same thing. We're just not popular enough.
Oh dear. We could end up like Princess Margaret's children.
Not even characters on the ground.
That is amazing. There must have been quite a bit of laughing on that set, wasn't there?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a good question, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, not as much as you would think. No, we didn't even make eye contact with each other, me and Ellie, yeah. Separate cars. No, but it was very, because it's classic, like, UK comedy, which means there's no budget. It's like two takes and you're done. So actually, everyone's just trying not to mess it up. And there's no improv, really, which we were always desperate to do. But I really thought everyone on it was so funny. I mean, like, Katie Wicks is so fun. I used to crack up all the time, anything she was doing. She was always so funny. But yeah, so it was good fun, but it was so time pressured that you couldn't really relax.
And you've got a somewhat parallel career path to Ellie and Tash Dimitriou as well, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
They've got a show, sketch show coming out
this year.
We've
actually never all been seen in the same room. Mm. Yeah.
And is that a friendly arrangement or is there some rivalry there you'd like to admit to on this
enemies
podcast?
For sure.
Me and Ellie are obviously close because we did Windsors together. And then Tash, we've obviously met, but we don't know as well. But no, I don't feel any sort of, like, the BBC commissioned both our shows. You know, there's overlap in the sense that we're white women of a certain age, sort of vaguely middle class or whatever. You worry maybe our material's going to come out quite similar because we're already saying some of the same things. But I actually think we're so different that it doesn't matter.
You don't send scripts over to each other and say, look, we bagged this,
we shotgun this, we've got our show out first, so we don't have to worry.
Yes Yours is out as of just a few weeks ago, right?
Yes.
And the name of the show is
it's lazy susan, but just Lazy Susan.
Yeah, no it's,
oh,
but I regret that now.
Yeah, could have been It's Lazy Susan.
Yeah, and that
series
would have been a great
two.
Series two, but yeah, it's simply Lazy Susan.
Are you free to record the...
Absolutely. Great. I'll be very upset if you don't ask me to be in it. Yeah. There's lots of big comedians in there. I mean, they're younger than I am and funnier, but still, come on.
Yeah.
You're in.
Thanks. We'll sort it out.
You're in.
I once asked Ricky Gervais if I could be in The Office just after they'd done series one. And I met him at a party.
Yeah.
And said, you know, when it was still relatively obscure as a show, hadn't blown up and gone overground yet. he said, oh, I like your show. You know, me and Joe were doing the Adam and Joe show at the time.
Yeah.
Or had just been doing it. And I was like, oh, cool. Well, maybe I could, you could put me in the office. I could do a little part. He's like, no way.
Okay. No way.
No way. Because his point, which was absolutely right, was that I wasn't an actor. You know, I hadn't really done much acting.
Mm-hmm.
So it would just be weird to have the guy from the Adam and Joe show suddenly...
He's working in the office now.
Doing a part. But you got to start somewhere.
Yeah.
So you got to sugar the pill. Don't laugh like that.
Gervais doesn't sugar any pills.
No.
Have you seen the Golden Globes?
Yes, I have, yeah.
No sugary pills there.
Yeah.
Do you think, you know the clip of him at the Golden Globes and then they cut to Tom Hanks looking appalled at one of the risque Gervais cracks? So the joke was, if you win an award, thank your agent, thank God, and then fuck off.
Mm-hmm.
Cut to Tom Hanks cringing.
Mm. Yeah.
In a disapproving way.
I think it's because he dropped the G-bomb. Americans love God.
They do love God. Not that we don't.
Hey, great guy.
Wasn't Gervais, this is vague in my recollection, but wasn't he saying don't say anything political? So don't talk about...
Yes. That was also part of...
So I think if Hanks is kind of a good guy, he might be like saying, you know, don't advocate for not righting wrongs or whatever.
Okay.
But do you think Hanks really is a good guy?
If he goes, I don't know where, well, I can't... He's got to...
He's got, yeah.
Well, I don't want to know if he's done any... I just...
You mean if he's unmasked as a...
Yeah. Just don't tell me.
If for whatever reason something emerges... Probably from the dark web, let's face it.
Yeah.
About Hanks.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like something will crumble in time and space.
We're hanging by a thread as it is.
Yeah. I really will feel like nothing, I can't trust anything.
Yeah.
He seems like such a good guy. Like when he got COVID, I was like, please don't die. Please don't die.
Please don't.
You and your nice, normal marriage wife.
Yeah.
Although he does have an AWOL son, and he I'm not does. Saying that
oh, I love
reflects
his...
badly on Hanks, but you're like,
but that's the only option available to Tom Hanks' son, isn't it? Because
all
children have to sort of define themselves in opposition to their parents somewhat.
Yeah, he's got like a good and evil son, hasn't he? Because he's got another son who's just like a mini Hanks, isn't he?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and he's an actor as well because he was in Fargo, wasn't he?
He's got Chet, he's got Colin, and he's got Truman.
Colin Hanks is a good
Colin
one.
Colin Hanks is the actor.
Yeah.
I think it's the name, isn't it? Chet.
Truman, 25, also in the film industry, albeit behind the cameras.
That's a way to go. If I was the Hanks kid, I would excel, but behind the camera.
Yeah.
Don't compete with Dad.
There's no point. Don't humiliate yourself.
Crying out loud.
Yeah.
Colin Hanks, he's quite recognisable now that I see him. He's in
because
a lot
he
of,
looks like Tom Hanks.
He looks a bit like Tom Hanks, but he looks like a sort of slightly etiolated, grumpier Tom Hanks. Band of Brothers he was in.
He's in Band of Brothers right at the end, isn't he?
Everyone's in Band of Brothers, though. Simon Pegg's in Band of Brothers.
Is he?
Yeah.
There's a phrase now called a nepotism baby, have you heard that?
No, what's that?
Someone...
I mean, I can figure out.
we'll give you a minute.
Someone was talking about Judd Apatow's daughter being in
Euphoria,
and someone was like, oh my God, I just found out that, like, she's a nepotism baby. Like, what the fuck?
I think it's interesting some people keep their parents' name... and use it and leverage it, and some people don't.
Judy Dench's daughter has a different name.
I would actually crumble under the pressure. I don't feel sorry for nepotism babies, but I wouldn't like it being, like you say, in that kind of shadow where I think I'd go the Chet Hanks route. I think I'd go...
You like to think you'd be Colin, but actually...
You'd start rapping in an offensive...
Mm. Yeah. Well, because I'm from... My dad's like what you would call working class done good.
Mm-hmm.
And I already feel quite an enormous, like, pressure just from that of having so much more than he had, stuff like that. If that expanded into being, like, he's a really successful, rich actor, producer, I think I would have just, like, shriveled to dust. I don't think I would have liked it.
It must be very weird, I think, to be the child of a very famous person or even just a very talented person.
Yeah.
That's tough, man. I think that if you get really famous, you shouldn't really be allowed to have children. What about that?
I think that's
or
fair.
You could just be made to give them away.
That's fair. Yeah, that's fair.
And then they could, because the chances are that they've got good genes.
Yeah.
They've probably got a lot of talent of their own.
Yeah.
Even though maybe not quite as much as their parents.
Yeah.
But still, a fair bit of talent.
Yeah.
So why not give them to another family that perhaps
and see
can't
how
have
they
children?
Do. Yeah. Nature nurture.
Yeah.
I think it's a nice idea.
Hey, everybody in the modern time, they got to get themselves a podcast. I will do yours and you'll do mine.
We're sorting out the problems of the world so fast.
Freya.
Yes.
You've got some good roles up your sleeve. Are you okay to chat about some of these?
We'll chat.
Jurassic World Dominion.
Yeah.
What are we looking at here?
So imagine a world where myself, you know, Z-list sketch comic, stand-up extraordinaire Ahir Shah and sketch double act The Pin.
Oh, yeah.
Get an email from the director of Jurassic Park, Colin, who's a lovely guy. And he asks in a very casual way, do you want to come and be in my dinosaur movie?
Is he a Brit, the director?
No, he's American, but he lives over here.
Okay.
And we were obviously all like, obviously, we'll do that.
So can I ask you at this point, was there no hesitation whatsoever, given that some of the Jurassic Park films are less good than others?
Hey, whoa. No, there was literally zero hesitation.
Yeah.
I grew up watching them. And this is like the last one that he'll do. Mm-hmm. So it basically like brings all the old characters from the original, like come back. So, you know, you're Jeff, you're Dern. They're all back.
Whoa.
But we all basically, because it was like, when did I do it? Was it 2020?
Yeah.
We all had to quarantine in this really posh hotel near Pinewood. But they were all there. So Jeff Goldblum was there with his wife and his kids. And he's like true Hollywood, like knows everybody's first and second name. You say one little thing to him and he's kind of like, hey, Freya Parker, how was your eggs yesterday? Etc.
Freya Parker.
Oh, Freya Parker.
Wonderful.
The whole thing was just like absolutely surreal.
So this is all brilliant. Before you've even started shooting?
Before we even started shooting.
And then what's the
mad.
Part you played?
So I played an air traffic control person, obviously, and I work for an evil dinosaur company. I think it's like Star Wars. The plot is like very similar every time. But we'd be sat there, be sat next to Ahir and Alex, and every so often someone would go like, we're fucking doing Jurassic Park. And then we'd all be like, I know, I can't fucking believe it. I can't believe it. And then there'd always be someone, there'd be like a break, and then there'd always be someone just whistling the theme tune.
Yeah.
It felt like everybody who was working on it was like a fan. It was just fucking cool.
Hard one to whistle, though, isn't it? Yeah, maybe not. Did you steal anything from the set?
No, but we got gifted something that I was about to steal, so I was really glad that I didn't do it. And he was like, oh, where's the...
embryos.
Where's the egg? No, we got gifted little origami dinosaurs on our desk.
Okay.
And then they took us to see all the sort of puppets and the animatronic dinosaurs. Yeah, we were just full just nerds the whole time. And yeah, they're amazing. We saw like a raptor and stuff.
Oh.
We saw there's like a baby raptor.
Yeah.
Very cute.
Did even you cry?
I didn't cry, but I do cry a lot.
Do you, so. Do you cry at commercials?
Oh, God, I cry at commercials. I cried once telling someone about the first time I saw... River Dance on YouTube. I'm tearing up right now. Literally describing it. It's so stupid.
I've got things like that as well.
What is it? Is it the ensemble feeling?
Well, River Dance, it's the spectacle. It's the surprise. It's the fact that it's better than anything else that's on that night at the Eurovision Song Contest.
Yeah.
It's like Ireland going like, oh my God, ching, 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 yeah. Money forever. Oh, I just love it. And the music. Love it.
What makes you emotional, Celeste?
Just the normal things, you know.
That's what a robot would say. Just the normal human
speaking
stuff.
Speaking of which, now I'm segueing to, in a way it's kind of a spoiler, but your radio DJ characters.
Yeah.
Who, spoiler, turn out to be robots.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is on your sketch show, and they work for a radio station called Buzz Midlands, and you play Ricky and Nicky. Mm-hmm. And on one of the sketches, you discuss things you thought were true until you were really quite old. Mm-hmm. Now, I think that me and Joe, when we were on the radio, did exactly that.
I'm so sorry.
And I think some of the other things, like some of the answers you got on that sketch, Dean from Leicester thought ponies were just baby horses. I think I had a conversation with Joe about exactly that at some point.
And that is a genuine confession from me until really recently.
Yeah, same here.
Because I, yeah.
Did you feel judged?
Yes. Yes, good. I did. Okay. When I was watching the sketch, you mean? Or
yeah,
when
yeah,
I
when
found
you're watching
out
the sketch.
Ponies
well,
weren't baby horses.
Both.
Both, yes. Yes to both.
Yes to both.
I did think, like, shit, this is uncomfortably close to what me and Joe used to do all the time on Six Music.
Oh, shit.
But we weren't... well, it made me want to ask you if there was
what
a
the
show you...
What the fuck we're playing at?
Yeah,
like, okay. All right.
Is it personal? Yeah.
Also, you had another one, which was... What are your favourite British puds?
Favourite yeah. British
I thought,
puds.
That is a good. That's we would have definitely used that one on the radio show. Are you? What kind of shows are you thinking of?
Capital.
It's yeah. It's Capital.
That was very quick.
Yeah.
Is that Roman Kemp?
Yeah.
On there?
Sorry yeah. to Roman Kemp because I'm sure he's
lovely guy.
A lovely guy.
And very good at his job.
Yeah, it's a hard job. Early mornings. I think this is the thing. So you kind of have to like, if you're doing sketches, you sort of have to shit on people that you're like, you seem nice, yeah. and I don't hate what you do. I think we were just trying to do something with as little as possible. And I know what you mean because they are slightly adjacent, a Capital radio DJ being like, what are your favourite British puds? And then, you know, you and Joe doing that. But I think the flights of fancy, the detail that you guys would have...
Sure.
It would have still been like an...
No,
you
we
know,
did it way better. Yeah,
yeah, yeah exactly.
Way better.
And general kind of regional radio where they just have to be really chipper, relentlessly
sure.
chipper with so little.
Mm. It's a perennial... enjoyable target for comedians
and thing. Just as much noise and distraction as possible. I feel like radio yes. should have died and it hasn't in the content heavy world that we live in. It shouldn't have really made it, and I think it's interesting that it does try to compete, and it's literally like so noise here I am shouting about this, cut to this jingle, now we've got a bit of a song, now we're here, so it's like just
describing Adam's
still describing
yeah.
me and Joe on Six Music.
Yeah. Should we go to a jingle? You love those.
I do. And I do love radio as well, though. I
yeah.
think that the reason it endures is that, well, I suppose if you look at it from a negative point of view, you could say that it's just kind of noise that's designed to paper over any kind of awkwardness or silence. It's just sort of background noise to stop you from actually thinking. But on the other hand, it can be very, very good and very intimate. And it is very much the, you know, obviously the forerunner of the podcast medium. Mm. But the other day I was in the doctor's waiting room, waiting to have a blood test, nothing serious, but still... You're always thinking, it might turn out to be serious.
Mm.
And actually, the babble of the breakfast DJ was comforting.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I imagined, like, if there was no babble of breakfast DJ running through inane messages, followed up by a bit of James Blunt and some Ed Sheeran, then the silence would just be oppressively grim.
Yeah.
And I was grateful for the radio, you know?
Yeah.
What I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, it's company. And like you say, I think when it's done well as well, you know, people like Greg Jenner, he's really good. Or like, what's that guy, the Welsh guy on Radio 1?
Hugh.
He's actually, yeah.
Is he a Hugh?
Yeah, Hugh someone. He's actually really funny.
Hugh Stevens?
And he's very yes. good at picking an interesting, like latching onto interesting things and sort of expanding them just off the cuff on the fly. He's, you know, or you think it's someone like Scott Mills has been going forever.
Millsy.
Yeah.
Millsy, yeah.
Do you know that Pete Tong is like 61?
Is he?
And I listened to a show of his on Radio 1 the other night and it was wall-to-wall bangers. It was so current. It was so good. And I just Googled Pete Tong. Pete Tong's 61.
Yeah, but 61 isn't what 61
no, no.
used to be.
I was still shocked though.
I'm nearly 61.
Yeah, yeah.
It's, and look
no,
at me. I'm
yeah,
incredibly youthful. And my finger is on the pulse.
God,
yeah.
I mean, too
well,
much
Burke,
in a way.
Burke off.
Anyway, so I guess what I'm saying is, can you just stop doing those sketches with the radio people?
Is that real melody?
Heaven's in my phone charger.
What?
I left it right there.
Woof.
Did you see it?
What?
Have you got it?
What?
Where's my charger gone?
Woof. What?
Where's my phone charger?
What?
The battery's about to die. It was on the table.
Woof.
Round and round in their heads go the chord progressions, the empty lyrics, and the impoverished fragments of tune. And boom goes the brain box at the start of every bar. at the start of every bar. Boom goes the brain box.
Celeste has described herself as a, quote, fragile girl who can't handle it on social media. That's a quote from an interview.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
I sympathise. I'm a fragile girl who can't handle it on social media as well.
Yeah.
Do you
want to
start
a support group?
Yes, obviously I do.
Cool.
Talk me through how you feel about it, because I sort of sensed, and maybe I was projecting, but I sensed a kind of apologetic explanation from you about that, like, oh, I should be on social media, but I'm not because I'm a bit fragile or something like that. Is that, was I misreading that?
No, do you know what? I think it's just, as ever with interviews, it's hard to summarize your maybe conflicted feelings around something.
Yes.
So I think I just blurted that out and a couple of other things, and then that's the thing that made it in. I don't actually know. I'm definitely never going to be someone that photographs their meals or sticks on a selfie or something like that. But I do worry career-wise that I should be on a platform so that people can engage with what I'm doing more.
You are on a platform.
Yeah.
You've got a TV show.
That's what I think. So I'm kind of, I think if that hadn't happened, then maybe I would be like, okay, I'm going to, I just think that ultimately, I know it sounds a bit cringy, but it comes down to what feels sort of authentic and right for you. And it is my way to be a bit more withheld. And I think, I mean, we've talked about this before, that like my absolute dream would be to be like Daft Punk or something, have total anonymity and it just be the work. And I feel like we're in this place culturally where we really want to know the people that make the stuff. I just think that's way more boring. I think hearing me talk about myself and my own life is far more disappointing and uninteresting than watching something that we make, or all the good stuff goes into the work. So for me, there's not a lot left for everything else. But, you know, wait till I'm trying to sell a book and we'll see.
Well, you can come back on the podcast. I just think there's other options.
Yeah.
And I just genuinely don't believe that your career will suffer in a significant way because you're not on social media. And I just think that, and I just think this.
Right,
I'm sorry, but I do. I just think this.
Yeah, yeah.
And it comes into my head and I'm thinking it, and there
you've
it
got
is.
To say, if you keep it in, that's actually
exactly.
unhealthy.
It's like it's a rupture your ass.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I do really think that like people should not feel that they need to be on social media for any reason whatsoever. If you have any qualms about it, don't be on it and you'll be fine. You know, and I always feel that I have to add the caveat like, oh, it's fine for me to say that. I've had an incredible, glittering and successful career. Here I am with maybe the biggest podcast in the world, bigger than Joe Rogan, I think.
Yeah.
And so that's fine for me to say. Not everybody has that privilege, but I do just think you'll be fine if you're not on it.
Are you a lurker? Because I lurk, which isn't good.
Yes. Mm-hmm. What, you mean now that I'm not on it, do I check it?
Yeah.
Oh, no, because I'm not even, I cancelled my account and everything.
Great.
So I can't even look. I can look at individual tweets, but if I want to look at the comments and things like that, which is what used to take up a lot of my time.
Oh, you have to log in.
Okay.
You have to log in.
Okay.
I think engaging with comments is something that actually, in terms of being like a fragile girl, like I actually can't. Like, you know, there's a sketch in our show called Sketch Hotline, and it's a spoof of like trolls and, you know, being a woman online and that accessibility that people feel that they can critique your work kind of like to your face.
Yeah.
And there's a line in it where it's like, don't call us, don't DM us on Instagram, call our hotline and tell us personally. And that's the joke. But after the show came out, I got loads of men DMing me on Instagram to critique the show, critique me.
Praise me, weirdly.
Yeah, a lot of praise for Celeste, actually. Yeah, I found that.
It was me.
I found that. Celeste has been just catfishing me on and off.
Do you know that's the thing? They call it digital self-harm. A lot of teens are doing it where they set up fake accounts, troll themselves.
What, so people see it?
Yeah, and sort of stick up for them. It's called
digital
self-harm.
That is so fucked up.
Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think maybe the thought's gone through my head.
Yeah.
but I've never done that.
Never actually,
what, shall I troll myself?
Yeah, or something, you know, in, like in a moment of madness.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I don't know that I ever actually
you
got
are
there.
You are a fragile girl.
Well, no, it's the kind of thing that I might do because my skin is thin. So
Me too, yeah. I
thought, well, this is daft. Much as I would love to be robust and confident enough to go on there and take the slings and arrows and respond to sincere and constructive criticism as well as trolling, you know.
I think you're just never going to feel good, though.
No.
Like, I engaged with someone on Instagram because he's really, like, just misunderstood something, and I engaged, and then I immediately was like, oh, God, oh, God! Like, I completely regretted it, and then was like, oh, God, I shouldn't have done that, and then I just felt awful about it.
Did you do it angrily?
No, it wasn't angrily, but he'd basically taken part of that sketch. It was a bit where we're like talking about like people calling in and we're writing down what they're saying. And I don't know, one-liners, you know, like, oh, like, go and fuck myself. Okay, I'll do that. And then it's like, as funny as AIDS. Thank you, sir. And he just messaged me being like, AIDS isn't funny. And, oh, I was a bit like, oh, like, yeah, we know that. And that's, then I just tried to engage with him and tried to sort of explain, like, this is satire. And also, like, that is kind of verbatim what people say to people.
Yeah. And, yeah, the weird thing is that in that moment, you were worried that this guy who can't understand quite a simple sketch was going to think that you thought AIDS was funny.
Yeah. I mean, why did I engage? I think it was so stupid. I just couldn't let it go.
It's funny, the troll thing, it's like trolls were provocateurs. They wanted to get a rise out of people. They deliberately posted stuff that they often didn't even believe in the early days of comment sections.
It was an active thing. Like, some people would be like, yeah, I'm a troll. Like, it's something that I do. It's like a style.
It's like a sort of a prank. But it wasn't meaningful criticism.
Right, yeah.
The joke was they would just put any old bullshit that sounded like a bit of criticism and wait for people to take the bait.
Yeah.
But then now the term has morphed into just any criticism is dismissed as trolling or trolling.
Yeah.
And it's not, you know, it's like there's a difference.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely a difference. For example, like the abuse that like Diane Abbott gets online is trolling. It's like it's vicious and it's untrue and it's focusing in directly on her. And it's whenever you see her name trending, I'm always like, oh, God, like that.
Yeah,
that,
yeah.
That poor woman.
Trolling, in my mind, originally was more sort of playful, albeit in a problematic way.
Mm. Does it still kind of exist, that version, would you say? Would you say it's been entirely subsumed?
No, I think so. I think there are still people. I think my impression of places like 4chan and then 8chan was that originally that's exclusively what happened there was people just going out and pushing people's buttons because they were bored.
The agents of chaos, basically.
And they didn't genuinely believe a lot of this stuff. But then I think that has changed over the years. And I think that, you know, the kind of thing you're talking about with Diane Abbott or whatever, that's not trolling. That's just straightforward, malicious.
Bullying. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Horribleness. Anyway, you see, this is why God invented jingles. Jingle.
Jingle break, it's a break from the podcast. In between the next bit and the bit that was last. Every now and then you have to take a little rest. Otherwise you're going to get tired and depressed. Take a look around, think that you exist. Think about the person you last kissed. Right, that's enough, now think about keys. Think about sausages, think about trees. Think of alien vehicles moving out in space. Think about the wonder on a little baby's face. Now think of Stevie Wonder's face on the baby's face. Now stop thinking completely, cause you're ready for the next part of the podcast.
Here it is. Now, you are in the new film Wonka. Have you got a nice little bit of screen time there? Got some lines?
I've got a couple of lines. It's a humble, small part.
Yeah.
It's one of those projects where I've only seen like a tiny bit of it and you feel like they go all over the world and there's so many different parts to it. And often you don't see the whole script. It's a bit like Jurassic Park. You never see the whole script.
Yeah.
Because especially me, I would come on a podcast and tell everybody the plot. It's not a remake, it's a prequel.
Prequel.
So it's how Willy Wonka comes to be a chocolatier.
Yeah.
The old Timmy.
We all wanted to know.
Yep.
And it's directed by Paul King, who did the Boosh and who did the Paddington movies.
Yeah. Yep.
Written by Paul and Simon Farnaby.
Yep.
It's a killer team.
It's a killer team. And it's really funny. and it looks great. It's like a proper,
yeah.
It's just a proper big movie. It's like big sets. It's a musical.
And who's playing Wonka?
Timothy Chalamet.
Timothy. Did you get some Timothy time?
Only in the makeup truck.
Good enough.
Yeah, good enough.
How was that? Did you marvel at his beautiful face?
I mean, he's a beautiful little boy.
He is. But he's very fragile.
A very fragile little boy. You know, very nice, very professional. And it was like extremely early, so I had to wear a wig. And, you know, you have those, like, things that you pop on under your eyes to sort of de-puff your face.
Oh.
So it'd be, like, 6 a.m, and they were like, hey, Fred, this is Timothy. And I was sort of like... so he's a bit like, oh, sweet. What is that? Kind of thing. So don't think I was particularly memorable for him. But, no, it was, like, super cool.
I'm quoting from the Oxford Mail, who wrote a short article about Wonka.
Mm-hmm.
And
Mail spelled M-A-L-E.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is just a guy I met in Oxford.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I call him the Oxford Mail. Reportedly, Tom Holland and Chalamet were two finalists for the role, but Spider-Man actor Holland ultimately lost out to Chalamet. Sorry about that, Tom.
Did you know that for The Matrix, Keanu Reeves wasn't first choice?
Has there been an article about it recently?
Was it James Corden?
It was James Corden.
I'm sure he's in the mix.
No, who else was it? Someone who was...
So DiCaprio was offered it.
Yeah.
Turned it down.
He turned it down because he didn't want to do another CGI thing after Titanic. Yeah. We read the same article.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. And also Johnny Depp either turned it down or didn't get it.
I bet Tom Cruise wanted to do it.
No.
I just made that up, but I bet it's true in a way.
He would have been good. It's too sort of camp for Tom Cruise, though, I think.
He couldn't have worn a leather jacket, could he? He couldn't have worn a long leather jacket, could he?
No.
Anyway, yes. Holland, currently weeping,
having
lost out to beautiful Timothy Chalamet.
Zendaya at his side, though, so...
Oh, my God, most beautiful woman in the world.
He's going out with Zendaya.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
So, you know, I'm not too worried about him.
They've just bought a house.
Have they?
Yep.
Oh.
In London.
What, did they tell you on the WhatsApp?
Yeah, we were just messaging just for coming here, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Welcome to Celebrity Chat Podcast with me, Adam Buxton. Do you feel confident in your ability to not get too competitive with each other? Because you're both talented actors and you're both doing separate projects, exciting things here and there.
Mm-hmm.
But yet you come together for Lazy Susan. Would you call Lazy Susan your main gig?
I think it is now. But yeah, we wouldn't stoop to... being competitive, but you know, at the end you do have to pick which one of us you think is the best. And if the listeners can vote, do some sort of vote as well. Just to settle
that'd be good.
Settle a little bit.
That'd be fun.
A fun little
that's fun.
But no, do you know what? We've gone up for we're so used to going up for like same parts or same. I think if one of us had like a meteoric rise, then maybe it would be a different story. We're both sort of scrambling around.
Yeah.
I mean, I think because I was in a very successful double act.
Yes.
And I wish we'd had counselling.
Yeah.
Early on.
Yeah.
I wish someone had sat down and said, look, this, and this are likely to happen. And if they do, don't fall out. Not that we ever massively fell out, but there was tension that was so unhelpful that I really regret. And I loads of bits of insecurity, many of which were my fault. Sorry, I'm just choking with emotion.
Tears are actually streaming down his face. Wow. Wow.
Excuse me. I'm 52. And I just wish that someone had sat us down and given us a little talk.
Yeah.
And said, like, actually, you know, the most important thing is to protect your relationship. And you can definitely go off and do other things individually. But if you... want to just torpedo it because you're insecure about the other one doing better than the other one,
right?
Then it'll be such a mistake.
Yeah.
And I'm glad to say that we sort of weathered it and came through the other end and still get on and do bits and pieces. But I certainly wish that we'd kind of plugged away a little longer at the TV thing because I think it was good fun.
I think it's so common. We've definitely, you know, been through some of that ourselves. Mm. And no one teaches you how to do it. And there's also something a bit you do feel a bit silly when it gets a bit tense or difficult, because you're like having a slightly tense discussion and then you've got to put a stupid wig on and one of you's got the duck prop or whatever. Yeah, yeah. And you're like,
so would you want to just do the bit with the slug then?
When we did our last Edinburgh, we had to share a room because we couldn't afford to have our own room. So it'd be
sorry.
Like,
I'm so sorry.
No, and this is why we're asking for £10 a month. No, we... But it would be literally like, good night, Bert.
Yeah, good night. Yeah.
You know, and but it was so intense that basically there's a weird thing where you're not that successful, but you're still taking it very seriously because you're on stage together every day, or that's what we had. So you're so vulnerable and there's so many pressures and you're trying to make it. So even though you're not successful, so it shouldn't matter, you're feeling like, well, we're close, so it does matter.
And also just doing the Fringe is eye-wateringly expensive.
Yeah.
And the house always wins. Like, that run, we sold every single show out. We did extra shows. And then when we got the breakdown, did we, like, make £300 each?
Less than. I think we just about broke even.
Like, staggering. Like, yeah. You sort of tell yourself, like, oh, keep it light, just chill, we're just playful.
Yeah.
But actually, it really does matter, and it's quite a hard sort of balance to sort of stay playful and also not be, like, crushed by the
reality of
the pressure.
And also, often, it's interesting to me how a two, it's a bit like a partner, and you slot into roles.
Yeah.
There's always dynamics, and sometimes you've chosen each other because you remind each other of certain familiar things that you don't feel like you like, but they are familiar.
She's talking about daddy.
But I do think that, I mean, so far, touch wood, we've always been able to talk it out, maybe not immediately at the time, but always afterwards. And there's always enough of a bond there, I think, and enough sort of love that you do figure it out. But yeah, you do feel very silly because you're like, ultimately, what we're doing is not very important, but it is very exposing. And I think that's why you can get all the worst aspects of yourself can start to come out. Anyway, Freya should talk now. But this is also classic that I would motor mouth with Freya. Freya would be like, yep.
Yeah. Me and Joe used to come out of interviews and I was jangling. Like, I would just be going for it in the interview, you know. And then afterwards, I'd feel sort of dirty and ashamed.
Yeah, a vulnerability hangover. Yeah. I get that all the time. But I definitely talk too much and I'd say you talk a lot less.
Mm. It's just hard to be in. I think a double act is such a sort of unique dynamic, and I think it is rare that they survive without
some sort of
den or and it's really sad. Like, there was an article, was it Badil and Newman and Badil, where they talked where they talked about doing this. They were the first like
Mary
double
Whitehouse
act
experience, and then they became this sort of stadium.
Yeah, they were like the first stadium
rock
comics, weren't they?
Star comics, yeah.
But are they the ones that did the sort of historians or professors that have
exactly,
a very petty?
Yeah,
yeah, okay. I remember.
But they got to a point where they couldn't like look. They were on stage, literally acting the part of being friends, but they actually weren't looking in each other's eyes. They weren't. They couldn't. They didn't talk to each other unless they were on stage. And I just read that, being like, "Good God, that is just horrendous." There's something quite tragic about it.
Yeah,
I think
that's right. They were on stage at Wembley Stadium, even, was it?
Wow.
Like somewhere massive.
Yeah.
And they were playing in the round and they were hugely popular and they couldn't stand each other.
Oh, man, that's just depressing, isn't it?
It's annoying being such a cliche. I imagine it's like when marriages break down and you never think you're going to be the person trying to take your ex to the cleaners and then suddenly you are that person and you're have I become this cliche? But I think that's why it's always the case that if you defer talking about things, they get worse and become more entrenched, and that's how you end up at Wembley Stadium not speaking. And so I think for us, it's, you know, we struggle to have those conversations because they are so uncomfortable.
Yeah, of course.
But you kind of know in the back of your mind, if we don't sort of disinfect the wound now, it's going to putrefy. So we've got better at trying to deal with it.
I would have gone with Fester.
Fester, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
How about, sorry, I kind of...
Just needless. Are you proud of yourself?
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. How about new characters?
Yes.
I was going to think of some ideas for new characters for you to do.
Oh, yeah, great.
Oh, we'd love some. Yeah, we're quite tired, so if you got any ideas.
I didn't get very far.
Oh, shit.
In fact, I only got one.
Yeah. Is he called Adam?
He's called Adam Buxton.
Yeah.
And he's got a podcast. Tedious stand-up comedians.
Mm-hmm.
How about this?
Yeah.
Or maybe this would be too difficult because you know too many people in the industry. They might think you're having a dig. But I thought that would be funny. I could imagine you playing them. You know, people who take stand-up, and this is not, this is an American thing, maybe even more than it is a British thing, mm-hmm. but who take it way too seriously.
Oh, yeah.
And who just think they are doing the most important job in the world.
Speaking truth to power.
And it's right? There's a science to it, and they refer to other comedians by their surname as if they're these kind of legendary historical figures that, you know, would be too impertinent to refer to them by their Christian name. They laugh much too loudly and confidently.
Well, they get it. This is the thing. Yeah. They get it.
In a writing room or at a show, you know, it's just, they very much get it, as you say.
But yeah, I also think that those types of stand-up, they're the gatekeepers as well. They want to keep it as this exclusive, and they're almost quite old school. They're
sort of like, by the way, this is not exclusively men I'm talking about.
No, no.
There are women who fall into this.
Mm. Women can be crap as well, and that's feminism.
Yeah.
but they're often the last sort of dying bastions of old school comedy where it's like, it should be a bit of a hustle. And
it's very alpha. It's all like
taking a beer on stage. Yeah. And
I'm troubled, but I'm not going to
Yeah, well, that's the other thing is always going on about how fucked up they are.
Yeah.
But it's, I suppose, an attempt to create an environment where it feels like that it's a craft somehow. I'm not saying that it's not, but it is so nebulous, you know what I mean? Like, it is a silly, ephemeral thing by nature. Yeah. So I think it must be common for most comedians to just be hit by a huge amount of anxiety about the possibility that they're wasting their lives on a stupid, meaningless thing.
Oh, that
thing.
Is like the insurmountable thing. Yeah. It's always a thing that you got to get over, that you're like, no one's asked me to do this and no one needs this and I'm not enjoying doing it. So what is the point
of
this?
I've devoted my life to this. And for what?
You feel like the stupidest but least worthy of kindness and empathy person in the world because you've brought it on yourself. But I think I get all the time show envy. I'll go and watch another show and I'll be like, that's what I shouldn't be doing this, I should be doing that.
Yes.
That's so much more worthwhile than the thing that I'm doing. And yet here we are.
Yeah.
I think it's the hardest job in the world.
I was sort of talking about, you know, we just did a radio pilot and I was knackered and my mum was like, you haven't been down a mine.
Honestly, people going on about how hard mining is the whole time. I'm sick of it.
I want to see a show, you know, where they did like wife swap.
Yeah.
I want to see that, but for comedians and miners. Yeah. And just swap them over and see.
Who would do better?
Tom Hiddleston described actors as 3D archaeologists.
That sounds right.
Yeah. Wow. That's on YouTube.
Is that when he's like Eton, Cambridge?
No, wherever. That's something else. There's so many amazing rumours about Tom Hiddleston.
He's the gift that keeps giving.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Let's just leave it at, oh, wow. You're welcome anytime, Tom, obviously.
Wait.
This is an advert for Squarespace. Hey guys, it's Broshak with me, Paul Broshak. We got Mike here. We're going to talk about his new MMA comedy special. We're going to talk about his view counts, and we're going to talk about conspiracy theories. What's up, Mike?
Hello, Paul.
Hey, brother.
I'm fine, thank you. I don't want to talk about any of those things anymore.
You don't?
No. I want to talk about... I built a website, Paul.
All right, stream some fights, settle some beefs, stick it to the elites, that kind of thing.
No, it's mainly dog pictures, Paul. And I did it on Squarespace. Have you heard of Squarespace? I went to squarespace.com/Buxton and I did a free trial. And I tried some of the beautiful templates, Paul, and I typed things in. I dragged in pictures of the dogs. And before I knew it, I had a website, Paul. So I bought it and I've made some very sweet dog t-shirts and I sell those on the shop on the website.
Uh-huh. But do you still fight and stuff?
A little bit, but not really. Oh, and Paul, I wanted to tell you that when it comes time to buy your website or domain on Squarespace, if you use the offer code Buxton, you save 10%. Paul.
Thanks, Mike. Where'd you do that free trial?
Squarespace.com/Buxton.
And how sweet were the dogs?
Very.
Continue.
Terms and conditions apply. Calls cost nothing. We'll pay you. We do not accept valid criticism. Only hate. Your feedback is important to us. Being mean is cool.
Rosie! Let's go this way. Come on, dog. Here she comes. She's loping. The tongue is lolling. Oh, lol dogs. Fly past from the hairy bullet. Welcome back, podcats. That was Freya Parker and Celeste Dring of Lazy Susan talking to me there. Very much enjoyed meeting them, and I'm very grateful to them for their time, for coming into my creepy hotel room and being nice about it. I do recommend checking out their Lazy Susan sketch show as an introduction to their world, if you're not already familiar with it. There's a link in the description of the podcast to the show on the BBC iPlayer, where you should be able to see it for a while. If you're way in the future listening to this podcast, I don't know if the link will still be there. Didn't really need to say that, but I said it anyway. Also, something I noticed when I was listening back to the edit, I said that Newman and Badil played their record-breaking show at Wembley Stadium, did I say? Yes, I think I did, and it was Wembley Arena. I know some of you will have been maddened by that, so I wanted to acknowledge it for you and admit my mistake and hang my head in shame and say I'm very sorry. I got it wrong, and I'm a big enough man to admit it. There's also a link in the description to a half hour, is it half an hour? Maybe it's more like 20 minutes, a segment about Badil and Newman going and playing that record-breaking comedy show back in 1993. If you want to have a bit of nostalgia for slightly simpler times. Speaking of which, one of the best things I watched recently, it was a real old guy moment, was a documentary I found on YouTube about the Traveling Wilburys, the supergroup featuring George Harrison, Jeff Lynne of ELO, Tom Petty, Bob Dylan, and Roy Orbison. Their debut album was released in 88, thereabouts. And though it's not an album I'm obsessed by any stretch of the imagination, I guess I do slightly love it, or at least I love a couple of songs on there. Heading for the Light and End of the Line. And there's something about them. But this documentary is really great. I hadn't seen it before. It's just a promotional thing that was filmed maybe by George Harrison's wife. It must have been someone in the inner sanctum, because they are filming all of the Wilburys in Dave Stewart's house in Los Angeles where they were making this record. And you got intimate Wilbury access there. Even Bob Dylan is allowing himself to be filmed, even though he doesn't look pleased about it, and he doesn't chat, and he keeps his shades on. But you get some great intimate moments of them laying down these songs in Dave Stewart's little vocal booth. I don't know, it just made me very happy to see all these people together. It's bittersweet, of course, because we're three Wilburys down. We've got Jeff Lynne, and who's the other one that we've still got? Bob Dylan. I couldn't remember which Wilburys we had left. We've got Bobbles and Jeff. And I hope that remains the case for, I'm going to say, 100 years. Anyway, I'll put a link to that little Wilbury film in the description in case you want some uncomplicated middle-of-the-road nostalgia fun. Also, a couple more blokes of a certain age chatting about music on a podcast called Mr. DeMille FM. Now, someone told me about this. A podcat got in touch and recommended this. I'm sorry I haven't got their name to hand, but thanks for the recommendation. And they recommended I listen to this one particular episode. The podcast is about film music, or music that has been used in films. It's hosted by Hugh Cornwell, ex of The Stranglers. lead singer. And sometimes the episodes are just him talking about the career of a director or a performer and some of the music associated with the films that they made. Other times he interviews guests, Debbie Harry, Fred Armisen, John Sayles, the director, that's a really good one. And Brian Eno. I think maybe the Brian Eno one is my favourite. Obviously, I'm a fan. But he's such a good and articulate talker. And his music selections from a very diverse load of films are fantastic. Lots of things I'd never heard before. As well as him talking about a few of his own tracks. Oh, it's a good listen if you're into that sort of thing. Link in the description. Okay, that's enough for this week, I think. That's enough. Thanks very much to Seamus Murphy Mitchell for production support and Becca Bryars for additional editing on this episode. Thank you, Becca. Thanks, Seamus. The artwork for the podcast is by Helen Green. Also, I'm very grateful to everyone who helps me with this show at Acast. Thanks very much to them for their continued support. Okay, Rose. Let's head back.
Doggy?
Yes? Come and say hello. Do some panting. Here. Hey.
I love you.
Okay. Let's head back. Would it be appropriate to proffer a quick hug? You know, nothing sleazy, just formal, friendly. Okay. We go. Well, I love you.
Bye!